طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر، من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر. تسكله نفقا لعودة اللاجئين.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news from Palestine with your co-hosts Salma Abu Ayash and Sharif Fahm. In this program, we discuss issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, as we do every week, were you involved last week in the Palestine-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's savage military attacks against them to force them out of their homes and annex their properties into Israel? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, what is your reason not to? It is Sunday, April 25th, 2010. We begin with one very important event announcement, followed by a summary of news highlights and what they mean. A benefit fundraiser will be held for the children of Gaza today, Sunday, April 25th, from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Campus Center Ballroom of the University of Massachusetts in Boston, located at 100 Morrissey Boulevard in Dorchester. All donations will go toward providing a clean water supply system for the children of the Beit Hanun Preparatory School for Boys in the Buraj refugee camp in Gaza. This is a project of the non-profit organization Middle East Children's Alliance, or MECA, founded in 1988. MECA has been working for years for the rights and well-being of children in Palestine, Lebanon, and Iraq, and regularly sends shipments of aid, builds playgrounds, and supports projects that make life better for women and children. Please try to attend this very important event today at the Campus Center Ballroom of the University of Massachusetts in Boston, located at 100 Morrissey Boulevard in Dorchester. Remember, there is virtually no clean drinking water in Gaza. The settlers who were previously in Gaza overdrew from the Gaza water aquifer, with the result that the water table fell to a dangerous level and drew in seawater. In addition, the settlers injected their house wastes and their industrial toxic wastes into the ground. The wastes seeped into the low water table and further contaminated the water supply, thus making it virtually impossible to find clean drinking water in Gaza. Please help us send a water purification system to the Beit Hanun Preparatory School for Boys in the Buraj refugee camp. Drinking a clean glass of water should be a human right everywhere in the world. Speaking at the event today will be Noam Chomsky, Professor Leila Farsakh, Assistant Professor of Political Science, UMass Boston, Dr. Nancy Murray, President, Gaza Mental Health Foundation, and Ziad Abbas, Associate Director, Middle East Children Alliance. Skip Scheel will give a slideshow featuring photographs of Gaza, and there will be traditional Arabic music. Generous donations would be gratefully accepted. Again, this event is today from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Parking is unlimited and free. 2 weeks ago, Friday, April 9th, marked the 62nd anniversary of the massacre of the residents of the Palestinian village of Deir Yassin, a 700-year-old village whose inhabitants were known to have been living peacefully with their Jewish neighbors. At 3 a.m. in the morning of April 9th, 1948, a month before Israel declared itself a state, the terrorist group Irgun, known as the Stern Gang, headed by former Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin, a wanted criminal by the British, entered the village and forced between 130 and 150 Palestinian residents, all women, children, and elderly men over 60, out of their homes at gunpoint, and paraded some of them down the streets of Jerusalem with blared warnings to Palestinians that this would be the fate awaiting them if they did not leave their homes. The rest were paraded down the streets of Jaffa and systematically executed. Now for a summary of news highlights. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton pushed for a resumption of talks between Israel and the PA. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu reacted by drawing his line in the sand and publicly declaring on Israeli television that there will be no cessation of building settlements in East Jerusalem. Former Senator and Special Middle East Envoy George Mitchell arrived in Israel on Thursday, April 22nd. In a by now nauseatingly familiar spectacle of servile groveling, Mr. Mitchell dutifully genuflected before the Lord of America and swore this country's fealty to the world's premier war criminal state of modern times, stressing the so-called unbreakable bond between the United States and Israel. But now what? With settlement construction off the table, what the devil can those two birds talk about that would materially advance the Palestinian cause of freedom from the Israeli boot? A press release was issued on April 19, 2010, from the office of the representative of the Quartet. The Quartet, remember, refers to a group of four nations established in Madrid in 2002 to mediate the peace process between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. The Quartet consists of the United States, the United Nations, Russia, and the European Union. The press release announced an Israeli move to allow more goods into Gaza, including several essential items for the repair of Gaza's housing, water, and sanitation infrastructure, telecom industry, and electricity distribution network. The Quartet representative welcomed Israel's move. Another press release on April 3rd announced the formation on April 2nd of an international coalition to break the siege of Gaza once and for all. The coalition, comprising the Turkey-based Insan Yardim Vakfi organization, the European campaign to end the siege on Gaza, the Greek Ship to Gaza campaign, the Swedish Ship to Gaza campaign, and the Free Gaza movement, will launch a flotilla of ships laden with cargo, media, parliamentarians, celebrities, and activists to Gaza in May. The flotilla will be composed of at least 8 vessels, including 3 cargo ships, and will set sail from European ports starting on May 3rd, reaching the port of Gaza later in the month. More than 500 passengers from more than 20 countries will take part, and more than 5,000 tons of cargo, including cement, prefabricated housing, other building materials, medical equipment, and educational supplies, will be delivered to Gaza in Palestine. The flotilla is scheduled to set sail from European ports starting May 3rd, 2010. In a transparent attempt to mollify the international community over the Goldstone report, Israel has allowed shoes and clothes into Gaza on Sunday, April 4th, for the first time in 3 years. The Guardian reported that the clothing containers in the shipment had remained in storage for 3 years, and that the clothing had rotten from the dampness in the so-called storage areas, even as the owners of the rotten merchandise were charged so-called storage fees in the thousands of sterling pounds. You may remember that in December 2009, the former head of Israel's Abu Kabir Forensic Institute near Tel Aviv, Dr. Yehuda Hess, admitted to harvesting organs from dead Palestinians and others without the consent of their families. A few days ago, we learned that the Israeli police uncovered a large, very well-organized industry of organ trafficking operating throughout Israel and arrested six men for being involved in the ring, among them a military reserves brigadier general and a lawyer. On Wednesday, April 7th, the New York Times published a grossly misleading article by Ethan Bronner entitled "Palestinians Try Less Violent Path to Resistance" on its front page. The title of the article itself implies that Palestinians have been violent until now and that it is only now that they are trying nonviolent means of resistance. The author reinforces that view in the reader by writing in the body of the text, quote, "Nonviolence has never caught on here, and Israel's military says the new approach is hardly nonviolent," unquote. Can it be that the reporters of the New York Times are ignorant? Apparently, Mr. Bronner does not know, or will purposely not admit to knowing, about the existence of the Palestinian Center for Rapprochement Between People, which was founded in 1988, and through which the first nonviolent protest against unfair taxation was launched, or the weekly demonstrations against the illegal wall at the village of Bilayn for the last 5 years, during which Israeli soldiers deliberately introduced elements of violence by injecting agents provocateurs to throw stones and justify so-called defensive violence on the part of the soldiers. More than 100 nonviolent demonstrators, including Israelis and internationals, have been beaten, wounded, or killed over the years. The fact is that Palestinians have used nonviolent resistance to their disposition and persecution for decades. For Mr. Bronner to have the Israeli military occupier and oppressor be the final arbiter as to the nonviolent nature of Palestinian resistance is the ultimate insult to unbiased reporting. The International Advocacy Officer for the Defense of Children International Palestine Section issued an urgent appeal concerning Israel's resumption of issuing administrative detention orders on children. A second child issued such an order is 16-year-old Ma'tasim Nazel, who was arrested at 3 a.m. on March 20th, 2010, at the Qalandia refugee camp near Ramallah. He was given a six-month administrative order under which he is not charged or given a trial. In July 2005, more than 170 Palestinian NGOs issued a call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel until it complies with international law and universal principles of human rights. The nonviolent international BDS movement, guided by Palestinians, has grown tremendously since then and has recorded numerous successes. A particularly meaningful, relatively recent success in the United States was the action taken by Hampshire College, the first of any college or university in the United States to divest from companies on the grounds of their involvement in the Israeli occupation of Palestine. Students for Justice in Palestine were the ones that started the initiative. The group pressured Hampshire College's Board of Trustees to divest from six specific companies due to human rights concerns in occupied Palestine. Over 800 students, professors, and alumni have signed SJP's institutional statement calling for the divestment. The proposal put forth by SJP was approved by the board. By divesting from these companies, SJP believes that Hampshire has distanced itself from complicity in the illegal occupation and war crimes of Israel. Meeting minutes from a committee of Hampshire's Board of Trustees confirm that, quote, President Hoekstra acknowledged that it was the good work of SJP that brought this issue to the attention of the committee. Inspired by this success, Hampshire College hosted a nationwide BDS campus conference from November 20th through November 22nd. Participants included students, faculty, and staff from around the country who are involved in Palestine solidarity activism. Not long after, on March 18th, continuing a long tradition of pioneering human rights campaigns, the Senate of the Associated Students of the University of California at Berkeley passed a bill in support of University of California divestment from war crimes. This historical bill resolves to divest ASUC's assets from two American companies, General Electric and United Technologies, that are, quote, materially and militarily supporting the Israeli government's occupation of the Palestinian territories, unquote, and to advocate that the University of California, with about $135 million invested in companies that profit from Israel's illegal actions in the occupied territories, follow suit. Less than a week later, in a move oddly predicted by Jonathan Kessler of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee at APAC's policy conference on March 21st, the vote was vetoed by the Student Senate president. When asked about fighting the Berkeley pro-divest initiative, Kessler said, quote, we're going to make sure that pro-Israel students take over the student government and reverse the vote. This is how AIPAC operates in our nation's capital, he added, effectively admitting that AIPAC has effectively taken over the United States Congress. This is how AIPAC must operate on all our nation's campuses. The students' action was condemned by the Los Angeles-based Simon Wiesenthal Center, which called the vote hypocritical and troubling, citing violence by Palestinians. A University of California spokesman said the university had not yet seen the resolution and could not comment. Student elections at the University of California at Berkeley were held from April 5th through April 7th. More about this later in the program. In Europe, successes have been more numerous and dramatic. To our knowledge, one of the most recent victories reported on February 19, 2010 in Electronic Intifada was against the Israeli military contractor Elbit Systems, a provider of unmanned aerial vehicles known as UAVs to the Israeli army, and one of the major providers of electronic fences and surveillance cameras to Israel's illegal wall. Banks, retirement funds, and other institutions involved in disinvesting from Elbit Systems and or blacklisting it are the largest Dutch pension bank, the Norwegian State Pension Fund, the communal Landspension Kasse, one of the largest life insurance companies in Norway, Danske Bank, the largest bank in Denmark, PKA Limited, one of the largest Danish pension funds, and Folksam, Sweden's largest asset manager. Some of these institutions have also disinvested from Africa Israel, a company led by diamond mogul Lev Levayev, which has been involved in the illegal construction of Israeli settlements in the West Bank and occupied Palestine. The Palestinian Stop the Wall campaign played a crucial role in convincing the Norwegian State Pension Fund to disinvest from Elbit Systems. As a result, the campaign became subject to Israeli office raids and its activists arrested. Such repressive Israeli tactics, however, has not stopped the momentum of the international BDS movement.
Thank you, Sharif, and good morning, listeners. Now we switch over to the interview section of our program. As Sharif mentioned, on March 18th, continuing a long tradition of pioneering human rights campaigns, especially in South Africa, the Senate of the Associated Students of the University of California, Berkeley, ASUC, passed a bill in support of UC divestment from war crimes. The vote was 16-4. A lot has happened after the initial passing of the bill, including a veto by the ASUC president and a new fight at the Student Senate for Human Rights and Democracy. The Berkeley campus became the locus of gathering of many people a couple of weeks ago when the bill was reintroduced to overturn a most undemocratic process, a veto. A veto by the President of the Senate, Mr. Smelko, to a bill that was discussed for over 7 hours at the Senate, and a discussion, by the way, that he did not even attend. Some who spoke to the Senate were people with an incredible history of working for justice and human rights, like Hedy Epstein, an 86-year-old Holocaust survivor, one of the first people to break the siege of Gaza, and an advocate of boycott and divestment as a nonviolent civic action and a means to pressure Israel to halt its repression and racism. Time permitting, we may listen to Hedy's address to the Senate at Berkeley. Others have spoken, including Richard Falk, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Palestinian Human Rights. Archbishop Desmond Tutu, a Nobel laureate, addressed the Senate in a letter calling them to divest. One moving account was also given by our guest today, Mr. Ibrahim Shiqaqi. Let us hear, listen for a couple of minutes of him addressing the Berkeley Senate.
It's ironic that while the lobby that defends and justifies the Israeli military-industrial complex is one of the most influential in the U.S., students on this side claim to be silenced and alienated by the bill, while in reality it has been the Palestinian voice who has been oppressed. Let me tell you something. U.S. vetoes to numerous U.N. resolutions targeting Israel, that is silencing. Bias in mainstream media outlets is silencing. Denial of visas for Palestinians to ask, the one who asked why there are no Palestinians here, denial of visas for Palestinians to travel and speak is silencing. Stopping foreign media outlets to enter the Palestinian lands and conveying message to the world is silencing. Being imprisoned for being part of a student group, being imprisoned for 2 years because you are part of a student group, that is silencing. When you are jailed for protesting the demolition of your house, that's silencing. When you are being beaten for disagreeing about confiscation of your land, that is silencing. Childish actions like tearing down posters today, that is silencing. Senators, when I am afraid to be videotaped today because I'm going back home in 4 weeks, that is silencing.
Ibrahim Shiqaqi, our guest today, is a Palestinian student from the West Bank, completing his master's in comparative law, economics, and finance from the International University College in Turin, Italy. For the last year, he has been a visiting student at UC Berkeley Law and Economics Department and an active member of the Student for Justice in Palestine group on campus and its divestment working group. Welcome to our show, Ibrahim.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I especially want to thank you for waking up so early. We're talking with Ibrahim from California, and it's about 5:30 a.m. over there, so I apologize for that. Ibrahim, tell us about the community at Berkeley which endorsed and drafted the bill that we are discussing today.
There's a wide range different individuals, institutions who supported the bill. So we have more than 50 official endorsements from groups who are within the campus. And they also range from religious, Muslim, Christian, Jewish groups who support, but also students of color groups. So we have a wide range of Filipino groups, the Black Recruitment and Retention Center. We have Pakistani Student Association, and I could go on and on with the list of that. But we also have off-campus endorsements from the Israeli human rights organizations. We have endorsements from groups in the Bay Area, from Switzerland, from Chile, from Argentina, also 50-60 organizations supporting this bill. We also got letters of support from distinguished Nobel laureates such as Archbishop Desmond Tutu, well-known academics like Noam Chomsky, Naomi Klein, and different individuals. But I think what's more important from those groups who have been supporting us is why Allah, this appeals to a large number of individuals and institutions. And I think this is because this bill is very specific, and it does target justice per se here, because it was very clear that a lot of the different opposition groups want to show that this is against the Jewish community on campus. But it was very obvious that we were targeting in this bill two companies, which are General Electric and United Technologies, which have direct relations to war crimes committed by the Israeli army.
We will go back to the issue of how this was attacked as an attack of Jewish community later on in our interview. I wanted to ask you, Ibrahim, you basically were born into the occupation. For 25 years, you've experienced it. What does it mean to you personally as a Palestinian who has lived under this oppression to be actually addressing the Senate? You were the last one, if I recall correctly. Basically, what does this bill mean to you as a Palestinian?
Well, I mean, as a Palestinian, and actually talking to my friends within that time frame, I think the main point is that we Palestinians have very little faith in the international community, especially in major players such as the U.S. And this is because we experience double standards in our daily life every day. So what we ask is, if this would be happening, if what happens to Palestinians would be happening anywhere else where Israel is not involved, then there would be outrage. But the reality is, Israel is being treated in this preferential way. And so what it means to be talking about boycott, divestment, and sanctions is that our goal is to recognize that if the international community is not willing yet to remove Israel from this special pedestal that it has, then civil society organizations, labor unions, the student groups, solidarity and grassroots movements will take that job on. Just a couple of days ago, the fifth annual nonviolent conference concluded in Belayin. And slowly this nonviolent movement is going all around the world, is gaining momentum. And our idea is that while some accuse this bill of singling out Israel, we're saying, yes, of course we want to single out Israel. Because what the actions that it's doing, what we are saying is that what we want is equal treatment to different countries. So when Israel commits war crimes, then it should be accounted for just like all other countries. Not more, not less, but exactly equal.
Very good. Tell us about the Zionist pressure on the students to overturn their earlier vote. What sort of tactics did you witness on the Senate floor? What is happening as we speak on campus?
So the first thing, and actually this is something that I would advise all students, and because this is going all around the country and outside the U.S., who are pushing for divestment bill, is to know their student senate very well. And so on the Berkeley campus, there are two major parties on the Senate. What we have in Berkeley is a part which is CalServ, a student group that was formed in 1984. It was around the divestment bill from South Africa, the South African apartheid. And so these senators who voted for us, the independent senators as well, voted for the bill. And there's the other group, which is Student Action. It has been on campus for almost 10 years. And you can visibly see that students in this group are less educated about the suffering of indigenous people around the world, such as the other people are. And what we have to understand is that while we talk a lot about the suffering of people and politics, all of these students do not know about the situation in Palestine. And so what they depend on is their friends and people who are with them at the same party. So number one, what they did was try to put them in that loop. The second thing was emphasizing on elections. Like was mentioned in the show before, in the beginning of April, there was the elections, and it was very important, and we saw it very clearly, that people from each political party at campus were siding with each other. And so they took that into consideration when the vote for the veto was there. I guess the third most important issue to talk about is this very disturbing interference by AIPAC and other pro-Israel lobbyists on campus. There's an article on the internet. It's called How to Beat Back Israel's Divestment Bill. And it talks specifically about Berkeley. It's quite amazing because what they mentioned there is that the Hillel, which represents part of the Jewish community on campus, they prepared for a strategy meeting. And in that meeting were representatives of the Anti-Defamation League, AIPAC, J Street, and the Israel's Council General in San Francisco, who was actually there that day and stayed that day and addressed the students in a very intimidating way. So all these three tactics were applied. I think the main factor that is crucial here, and this has to do with students on campus, but I think how people in the West and the U.S. think is not what they think about the Palestinian-Israeli situation, but how they think about it. And so it seems what the pro-Israel lobby has been trying to do and has succeeded is make people think that this is two sides who are in this conflict and they are two equal sides. And this is completely ridiculous because it doesn't take into consideration power dynamics. So the problem is people in Berkeley or in Harvard or in MIT can study about colonization and apartheid, but they can't easily find that link between what they're studying and what I live in Palestine. And I think that's one of the main things that this divestment campaign is doing. It's educating people about what's going on there in reality, and it's giving them a chance to steer away from mainstream media and listen to what's really happening, like what's going on in this show.
Yes, the article that Ibrahim is referring to is by Josh Nathan Kazis at The Forward, and Philip Weiss on MondoWeiss.net, his blog, commented on it, and the title of his comment was, "I think UN partition vote happened this way too." He quotes Emily Carton, who was one of the student senators, who says that, it was an exclusive meeting, right, Ibrahim, where these senators were bombarded with pressure, and she said there was intimidation. Basically, for one thing, she says they were all a lot older, they were a lot more distinguished. We're talking about people with a lot of power in this country. These are people who haven't only poisoned the democratic process at our Senate and Congress, in Washington D.C. This lobby is going after basically one of the most sacred of all places, university campuses. They have vowed to help install the new ASUC president, and they succeeded, and he will do as AIPAC wishes. However, there has been, Ibrahim, some serious election fraud allegations against the new ASUC president-elect Noah Stern of Student Action, who was basically planted there with the support of AIPAC. Several witnesses have accused Stern, whom this board endorsed for president, of offering to vote on students' behalf on the last night of voting at a Greek philanthropy event. Tell us what you know about Mr. Stern and what is being planned for the anti-BDS campaign at Berkeley. What are the students' reactions to what's happening with this?
I mean, there was that on campus on the Daily Californian, which is the main newspaper of UC Berkeley. There was a complete article talking about the accusations of the now president of the ASUC from next term. Now, the Attorney General of the ASUC, they have this investigation that's going on. I mean, I don't think that this per se is the thing to be looking at when we're talking. I think what's more dangerous is actually the quote that you took. You know, it's very dangerous to see the way that AIPAC is thinking. And, you know, the quote of this is how we work on the nation's capital and this is how we should work on campuses. I think one of the things that is affecting the senators is this type of intimidation. There was actually an email that was sent to the 16 senators who voted yes for the bill in the beginning. I like to quote it. It's just three lines. And what was sent to these 16 senators was an email saying, since this is all public information, wait till you see your names and pictures in Google, Bing, and other search engines, and your voting record too. Let's see how your vote will help you find jobs or get admitted to U.S. medical schools, law schools, etc. You are all adults now. You sleep in the bed you make. So it's very obvious that the student senators are facing a lot of intimidation, and they are being confronted by people who have a lot of power in this country. And I've said this before, I really believe that this is exactly how it is. It is a struggle between power and justice. Now, the president of the ASUC, very clearly, the current president, Will Smalko, was on the power side by vetoing this bill while he wasn't even there that night. That night, the first night where we had 7 hours of discussion, he was not there. And yet he did publish the veto saying that there was not enough deliberation and discussion about it. So power and justice. It seemed that the president took the side of power, and we're hoping that the side of justice will be the one who prevails in the end.
Ibrahim, this quote from that email was pretty telling. I really hope that you can share it with me via email. Just a comment on Philip Weiss's blog, just to comment a little bit on what you said, which is indeed what this is all about. This is about the lobbies. This is about the infection of our democracy and democratic process. It's a democracy in this country is truly a sham. He was saying on his blog, must all of these decisions be subject to such backroom influence? That meeting that they had with Hillel is an example of that. Truman said he'd never been pressured so much as he was on his decision to recognize Israel, overruling his own State Department and UN representative. Obama is getting pressured now. And is really, this is the way to make policy. Don't people resent it? And I want to emphasize that this is what's happening at Berkeley is just a microcosm of what's happening on a larger scale in our country. This is nothing new. This is how AIPAC and all lobbies that drive us towards steer out tax money to maintain occupation, whether it's in Palestine or Iraq, to deforest our lands, to pollute our rivers, to exempt criminals, whether it's in the financial sector or in the military sector, to water down our universal healthcare. This is how lobbies operate. And so what are we Americans to do about this? Please do take notice, listeners. This is not just an event that's happening on campus. This is basically an indication of what's happening in our country overall, and what are we going to do about that. I have a couple more questions for you, Ibrahim. One is, I want to know if you can give us a recount or a recap of what was the outcome of the events that ended on Thursday, April 15th. I was certainly confused that day, watching all of the Twitters going around. And basically, what do we expect to happen on this coming Wednesday, April 28th?
Okay, so on March 18th, of course, was the first day where there was the vote on the divestment bill, and it passed by 16-4 votes. Now, what happened is that the president of the AFUC has 7 days to file the veto, and he did that on the last day, in the last few hours that he had, he did that veto. What happened on the 14th and the 15th was we tried to override this veto. So we needed 14 votes out of 20 to override the veto. And what happened that night was, after all the discussions and after all the testimonies, we had 13 votes from 20. And so what we did is that we tabled this issue in order to have more lobbying and to figure out more what was told to these senators and how they were intimidated in a way to change their views from voting for the divestment bill to vote with the veto. Now, this Wednesday would be the last chance to actually pass this bill. Again, we are emphasizing the issue of education on the issue of Palestine, because the role of the BDS movement is to educate people and to educate students around the world about what's going on and about the suffering of Palestinians, not only in Palestine, but also Palestinians all around the world, refugees who are not allowed back in their land. The BDS movement is still in its beginning. Different campuses all around are now trying to adopt BDS bills. And so what we're hoping on Wednesday, which is April 28th, is to have that 14th vote and to override the veto and Berkeley stay with the legacy of divestment from war crimes, divestment from oppression, and divestment from apartheid.
We just have a few more minutes left. I want to keep you online, Ibrahim, and while I make a little bit of commentary, just in case you want to say more things about this. There's been a document circulated on the internet titled Tikva Talking Points, which advised people who would speak against the bill to be, quote, be emotional, quote, don't be afraid to show how you feel, angry, sad, etc. Quote, the bill is in fact an attack on the Jewish community. An unjustified attack on Israel is an attack on my Jewish identity. It's an attack on me. Another quote, don't mention that Israel is being singled out. Don't mention crimes committed by other countries. Don't suggest divestment from other countries. It's a weak argument and implies that Israel has committed war crimes. Don't try to deconstruct the bill. Don't focus on addressing the fallacy specifics of the bill. Instead, focus on how it is an attack on the Jewish community. End quote. This, to me, was basically it is how the Israeli lobby has succeeded and is succeeding in silencing people from criticizing Israeli crimes by the threat of accusation of anti-Semitism, by avoiding the discussion of Israel's crimes, racism, and ethnic discrimination. It's a state which commits crimes in the name of false victimhood by not allowing even a discussion of what it means to support a Jewish state on Arab lands which discriminates against other religions, ethnicities. A state that only allows Jews to exercise right of return, but not Palestinian refugees to return to their home. And my feeling as a Palestinian is that we need to address the nature of this state, to distance Americans from the so-called partner and friend, this partner who does not recognize does not have permanent borders, does not have a constitution, not even laws that protect people equally, regardless of ethnicity, religion, skin color, etc. And my feeling, I don't know, I wasn't on the Senate floor, but my feeling is that as long as Americans feel that Israel is a victim, that Jews today are still the victims, they will overlook Israel's crimes and allow for this injustice to continue. I would like our listeners, since we don't have a lot of time, to actually go and Google Judith Butler, who is a Jewish professor at Berkeley, talking talking about Jewish exceptionalism and the fact that it is not anti-Semitic to take a stand against Israel, to listen to Hedy Epstein's account and address to the Senate, Hedy Epstein, a Holocaust survivor who is supporting this divestment bill, and maybe even Richard Falk's address to the Senate outlining these horrendous crimes that Israel commits daily in the name of Judaism and in the name of its victimhoods, and to educate yourself about what's happening here, because as Ibrahim has told us, there's one more vote that is needed. This is not over. They have not succeeded, and we have one more chance to let justice prevail. So, Brahim, as a last comment, I would like you to talk to our listeners and tell us how we can support you on April 28th on Wednesday.
I think the main point is to be able to talk about this, and radio programs like this where the public can hear more about this and can talk about this in blogs and talk about this in media outlets, I think is very beneficial for us. Obviously, people who are around San Francisco and the Bay Area to show up that day Wednesday, I think the vote will be around 6 or 7 p.m., and show their support. There's also this website that was put by a group that's actually has been supporting us, Jewish Voice for Peace, and it's www.standwithstudent.org. And mainly, if you can't be around that area, what you do is you put your name and you put where you're from, and there would be a piece of paper or a sticker there saying this person is not here, but they do support this bill, and they do support divestment. I just, as a last comment, I just wanted to emphasize what you were saying about the accusations to the bill, and how it seems that people who go up and cry in front of the senators, it seems that tears are more important than the Palestinian blood. And I think to those who talk about the delegitimization of the state of Israel and how this does this, I think that it's completely absurd to shift the terms of discussion so that they prioritize abstract notions like statehood and legitimacy over this concrete and inherent rights of human beings. And so I just want to say that divestment from GE and these companies, or any company that manufactures weapons, is not only morally legitimate, but it is the right thing to do.
Ibrahim, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We wish you the best on Wednesday. Our hearts and thoughts will be with you. And listeners, you heard the excerpts from that email that these young students are receiving. They are dealing with the giants in this country that are making our senators on Capitol Hill cower to them. And so imagine what kind of pressure these students are under. Please do write them in support. Urge them to stand up for justice. And let's make this happen. Thank you again, Ibrahim, and best of luck. That's it for us today. We wish our listeners a pleasant and restful weekend and look forward to having you with us next Sunday. Same time. Until then, this is Salma Abu Ayyash and Sharif Fahm signing off for this week in Palestine.